Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Mindscape Podcast. I'm your host, Sean Carroll. And I don't want to waste your time with banter today because we have a very special guest. We're very happy to have Wynton Marsalis join us on the podcast. If you are in any sense a jazz fan, Wynton Marsalis is the proverbial guy who needs no introduction. He has been acclaimed as a trumpet player, of course, but also as a composer, a band leader, and also an educator and an ambassador for jazz music worldwide. He's the winner of multiple Grammy Awards. He was the first jazz musician, indeed the first non-classical musician, to win a Pulitzer Prize, countless honorary degrees, national awards, etc. He's recorded a huge number of albums as a leader of small ensembles, big bands, and in collaboration with a diverse group of people from Willie Nelson to Eric Clapton to traditional musicians around the world. He's also the founder and leader of Jazz at Lincoln Center, which joins things like the Metropolitan Opera and the New York Philharmonic in residence at Lincoln Center. Not only that, but he is a classical musician who both composes and plays trumpet with symphony orchestras. He won a Grammy for that, too. So you get the point. Wynton Marsalis is arguably the most important figure alive in jazz today, and certainly enormously influential in how we think about music. He and I got to meet at a nice event called Kent Presents. This is an ideas festival in Connecticut, sponsored by Ben and Donna Rosen. And we hit it off immediately. He's a very curious guy. He wanted to know about physics and things like that. I wanted to know about jazz. So we have a wide-ranging, bouncy conversation. And if you don't like jazz, if you've never heard of Wynton Marsalis, no problem. I would still recommend listening to this episode. This is not one of those conversations where we just sort of name-drop our favorite musicians or artists from the past or from the present. Wynton Marsalis is an opinionated guy. He always has been. That's one of his trademarks all along. And he gives us some of his opinions, not just about music, but about the state of the world, the state of the country, the state of education in the United States. We talk about physics, we talk about time and quantum mechanics. This is your chance to spend an hour with a brilliant, creative person with an open, fertile mind. We had a great time, and I hope you will too. So let's go. Wynton Marsalis, welcome to the Mindscape Podcast.
All right. It's such a pleasure, Sean. Thank you.
So I understand that your first paying gig was as a funk musician. Is that right?
That's right.
This is in the 1970s. This is the bell bottoms, the big hair, the whole bit.
That's right. Early in that, yeah. We played an elementary school dance.
Yes. All right. Were you recompensed for this? Did you get paid?
Yeah, we got paid. We got paid $100. It was five of us. So it's $20 a person.
And what were you playing?
Well, we played just stuff that was on the radio at that time, but we had learned like maybe 15 songs or 20 songs or 20 songs in 3 minutes. It was a dance of 3 hours, so
all right.
After we played the 20 songs, we were like, okay, that's it. And everybody was like, hey, we still have 2 more hours to go, so we just played those songs in a loop.
They can still dance.
We played them in a loop over and over again, so we always laugh about that job.
But there is something special about jazz, right? I mean, what in your mind is what makes jazz special?
I think that the three fundamentals of the music,
uh-huh,
improvisation, to some type of grid. So you can improvise, but you have some restraint.
Right.
The swing, which means you're improvising with other people, and there are things that govern how you all will interact with each other, but those things, you also choose them. So if you're a heavy swinger, you choose to be in the groove and you choose to give some points over to people. If you're not, you don't. And then the blues, which is an optimism in spite of all evidence to the contrary.
Aha, so explain that.
And it's like in the words of a blues, I went down to the railroad, put my head on the track.
Uh-huh.
I went down to the railroad, put my head on the track. When that train came along, I snatched my fool head back.
So there's something in there. So the blues is sort of about living through life, right? Not giving up.
It's living. It's about an optimism that's not naive.
Right, right. And to say more about swing in particular, because, you know, I've had talks with musician friends. I'm not a musician myself. I appreciate the music very much. But, you know, swing is is, you know, there's other genres of music that improvise. Mm-hmm. The blues is a genre all by itself, but swing is something that is uniquely jazz.
Physics. It's, you know, it's relational.
Right.
And it's quantifiable. Mm-hmm. It's the reconciliation of opposites. So if you look at swing as a concept, whatever it takes for you to get from the I consciousness to the we consciousness is swinging. Now, when you embrace that in such a way that you're in a groove and you make all these the little adjustments that are required to make to not just endure another person or to tolerate them, but you embrace them, then you're swinging.
Yeah.
When you look at it as a concept, it is a six rhythm, ding, 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 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, against a four rhythm, 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4, ding, 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 ding. Now, on the micro level, where it shows up is if you start to play fast, so if you go ding, 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 and you go, you can't go. You have to go. You're shuffling.
Yeah.
So that's a two and a three also. So instead of it being, it's difficult.
Yeah.
To kind of to negotiate the feeling of the, that odd and even at the same time. It's the swing is the bass, which is the lowest pitch played on in four on every beat. Match with the drums, this in six, which the cymbal is the highest pitch and the pitch that you can hear the most. So you have all these extremes.
Sounds like the drummer has a tough job there.
The drummer has a tough job. He's the president. he can just choose to just bowl everybody over, but great drummers, they will say a great drummer is kind. Mm. They use their power very intelligently and sparingly.
And it sounds like it's about, I mean, so much music is about tension in some sense, right? I mean, it's a competition between what you expect, the sort of natural, easy rhythm pattern versus a little bit of what doesn't quite belong. It drives you forward, right?
Right. I'm interested in how you would see that in relation to concepts that you work on where you have opposite things that come together and you say, man, these two things are together. I never would have thought these things come together too.
Yeah, it's all over the place. I mean, physics, science, right, is driven by what we don't understand. We try to leap into the places that we don't yet understand. Science, professional scientists don't spend their time doing homework problems, you know, that the college students do. And so what is the way to make progress? It's to pinpoint two things that you both think are true, but they don't agree with each other. Right? Mm-hmm. And that's where all progress comes from. So the big one right now in physics is we have quantum mechanics and we have gravity, and they don't play well together. And they're in tension, right? And we're trying to figure out, is one of them better? Is one of them more fundamental? Or is it we got to start all over again? And it's sort of the source of creativity a little bit, right? And jazz seems to be much about creativity.
Yeah, it's about creativity at the point of impact. I was also interested in your comments about time. Mm. Because in jazz, you live in the future. You progress from the future to the past.
Okay,
so that's like life. Yeah. You're in the future, but you're going into the past. You're moving forward into the past. You're not moving forward into the future.
No, you're gonna have to break that down for me.
Okay, you are in the future. Yeah. Like now, the future's past. Okay, so we're all in the future.
Good.
The future.
Good.
We're in that. Then we pass through the present into our cognizance of that present, which is then past.
Okay.
So jazz is a mastery of a moment of presentness.
Right.
So the future becomes what you think may perhaps happen with the form at a given in a given space and time.
Right.
And the challenge of jazz, when you're actually playing it, is how can I deal with it with all of the entropic moments of this present and give it organization and logic, and give it organization and logic and form with a group of other people who have no idea of what they're going to play until they play it.
Well, I wanted to ask you about this. I mean, so there's the individual improvising and there's the group. Let's just do the individual first. I think that's probably easier to wrap our brains around, right? I mean, do you go into an improvisation to a solo with a plan, or is it literally right there what you're feeling?
I never do that.
Yeah.
Every person is different. I like to be present, mm-hmm. so I don't have a plan. My one plan is to take thematic material and develop it in some type of interesting way to me.
So, and is that the chords or the melody?
The chords are the playing field.
Uh-huh.
It's like a football field.
Yeah.
You know
the
what
arena.
It is. That's the arena. So you know what a football field, the sidelines, the harmonies progress in a certain way. And there's some alterations, but they are the harmonies.
Right.
And they're laid out in time. So like you look at a clock, you there's 12 numbers, and you know where you are. When you look at those hands, you know that's how a harmonic form is.
Right.
You know where you are by the progression of harmonies.
And where, you also where know, you have to get back to.
You know where, when you get back to the top, but the top may be different, but the harmony will. The harmony is basically the same. But it's because chords have different root notes, and they're also a way to substitute chords. It's kind of like the directions to your home. Mm. You give me 50 sets of directions that incorporate different streets.
Yeah.
And the general direction will be, or the different ways you can express an equation with different numbers. We're playing on that playing field. So now we know that. Then we have to be in time. And the concept of time in jazz is probably the most kind of physics related.
Right.
Because you're not in time, like 1, 2, 3, 4 time. You're in what we call swing time.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not being on time. It's being in time. And that time is like a wave because everybody is tugging and pulling at it.
Right. Right. Yeah, and that's so, when you mentioned how important it is in physics, that's exactly right. Like so much of physics is about waves
mm-hmm.
and the resonance, the beating together, and the interference when they're going in different directions, right? Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm more interested in what does the degree of interference determine something about the wave, or does a wave just continue the way it is?
Yeah, it can be either way, right? So I think that physicists love to start with the simplest thing first, right? So the simplest thing is, yeah, the waves, if you have two different waves and they're coming into the same place, they do their own individual thing, and then they keep going. And at that moment, they might interfere or constructively interfere, which is a sort of contradiction in terms, but it means they add up together, right? So we teach our students that first, and then the next thing we teach is, well, what if these waves are talking to each other, right? Like, what if they interact with each other? And these days, we think our best theories of the world are quantum field theories, where the world is this collection of fields pervading all of space, and what we think of as particles are vibrations in these fields, right? Mm-hmm. And if you make a new particle, that's because you... in fact, the analogy I use is if someone's playing a piano and there's another piano in the room, the other piano starts humming a little bit, right? That's how you create new particles in particle mm-hmm. physics.
Kind of sympathetic vibration.
Exactly that. That's right.
Yes, yeah. That's exactly what jazz is like. Like a lot of times you can anticipate what somebody is going to play. Or you can feel them a certain way. And sometimes they do the opposite, and that's okay too.
Yeah,
like it's really a lot. It's like super conversation.
There's no wrong notes, right?
yeah, you know there are actually no wrong notes. They're only awkward moments and non-resolutions and lack of confidence in a. Mm. You have to hear your way out of problems.
Right,
it's kind of like you're having a conversation. And somebody is.
Oh yeah, awkward moments.
Dealing with an awkward kind of yeah. But it's fascinating when you get a lot of people improvising who really can play how they all hear and interpret the moments, because it's successive moments of crisis. It's always a crisis.
Right.
Every moment is a crisis. And when the band stops, it's a break and only you play, then it's really a crisis for you because you have to maintain the momentum and the identity.
Can't lean on everybody else.
No, they're gone. Then they come back in. So you know, our thing is really about mastery of time.
Mm-hmm.
And the mastery of time is an individual thing on one level, but in the jazz sense and in the swing sense, it's mastery of the fluctuations of time with other people.
Right. Yeah, and that's where swing comes in. You know, you're just that's pushing what swing up is. And against the obvious regular beat, right?
You're right. You have the obvious regular beat is a constant that you all know.
Right.
But the swing is all of you all's interpretation of that constant.
Right.
And how you can negotiate that constant and make it feel good.
And, you know, sometimes these solos can get pretty long. You can go on for a long right. time. How much of it is conscious, would you say? Like, could you even remember the solo that you played?
No. You can't remember, but it's conscious. Like, when you speak, it's conscious.
Okay.
Like, you weren't using notes when you were talking, when you lectured the other day.
Right.
But you knew what you were talking about.
So I knew the general outline of what I was going to say. But I had a plan going mm-hmm. in, right? And...
Well, the form gives us improvise. A plan.
Yeah. Okay.
So when I said I don't have a plan, the form gives you some type of plan. And then I tend to take things from the musicians I'm playing with. Like when they play stuff, I play things. And I think that in my solos, I try to really think about construction.
Okay, what do you mean by that?
I mean, how am I going to get from this point by turning phrases around or how am I going to make a cohesive and coherent statement.
You're telling a story.
How am I going to tell that story?
Beginning, middle, and end.
So that you can follow it.
Right.
That's and right. How can I get all these little subplots and interesting things and change the emotions of different moments and add things? And
it is usually in this group context, right? And as impressed and overwhelmed as I am with a master improviser, I'm even more impressed that people can do it together, right?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
How much of it is, you know, I see on the bandstand, you know, people looking at each other, like the players, and like how much communication?
It's a lot.
Is it planned out? Is it really just you sense it?
No, there's so much communication, and that's what I love the most about playing, is playing with other people. There's so much communication, like shifting beats. Are you ready to end your solo? Is that really the chord you want to play? Where are we? Oh, okay. Are you going to play a riff there? it's so much of it. It's like, and it's very intense.
Right.
It's like an intense emotional and mind game with other people. And it's all benevolent. Like, it's none of it is, because the swing is a reference. And it makes you, if you want to swing, it makes you have a constant that you all agree on.
Yeah, okay.
It's like kind of like what the Constitution is supposed to be.
Right.
You have to agree on something.
Yeah.
Something has to have meaning in order for us to have a meaningful dialogue. And there has to be some arbiter, something that we both agree, okay, let's
Otherwise, it's just noise, right?
Yeah, let's not sell this to our kids.
That's right.
You know, let's, yeah.
Yeah. And, I mean, jazz is, you mentioned in the, we just, for the podcast listeners out there, we just got finished with some remarks that Winton made here on stage. And you also mentioned the Americanness of it, right?
Yeah.
I mean, there's something,
yes.
And for better or for worse, right? Mostly for better, but jazz is part of America, right. And America's part of jazz.
Well, I don't think for worse, the worse is a part of better.
Yeah, okay.
You know, you can't. It's like what you were saying when you gave us the examples of entropy. One is nothing, then there's some things, then it's, you're not going to have one of all one thing.
Right. If everything is too simple, nothing interesting is happening.
Right. And that's the famous Shakespeare, to be or not to be. Yes.
Right.
It's going to be one of those, or maybe.
Right. That's
like,
right.
You know, and all the kind of greatest artists have that kind of dichotomous unity.
Mm-hmm.
They understand. That's why Shakespearean villain is so great.
Oh yeah,
like he understands. There's something noble in this villain. There's a humanity in the villain, and a kind of simplistic way of looking at the world does not work well for democracy.
Mm-hmm.
And jazz it came from the most maligned group, people that have been slaves, but they didn't play jazz when they were in slavery. They played jazz when they became free. And freedom is something that has not been guaranteed to people in the world throughout time.
Nope.
If you go throughout time, most groups of people have been dominated or they have been beaten. It's not to be subjugated to the will of a person or a group of people. It's not something that's only about the United States of America. Most of the greatest heroes that we celebrate are military heroes that defeated people and engaged in absolute murder, concubinage, and slavery. That's why they were
like
conquering,
to talk about it.
Right?
Yeah.
That's why they were conquering people.
Yeah.
And you know, America is a hope to the hope that we have to change, and it's hard, it's difficult, and it's challenging. And we at this moment appear to not be up to that challenge, but when we actually understand what's going on in the world, and that the guaranteed democracy, and even the thought that there is equality, is not something that's guaranteed.
Mm-hmm.
Your side is not guaranteed to win.
No.
You know, there's a lot of power. And by that, I don't mean in a fear of another nation. I mean a fear of an ideology which says, to hell with these people, which is what has dominated the world most of the time. And it has even been dominant in our country's leadership, if not its people.
But a democracy is a place where you can lose an election and give up power willingly, right? You don't.
You're supposed to.
You're supposed to, yes.
And you're right. You're also supposed to agree on a set of principles.
Would you say that jazz is, in some sense, a democratic form of music compared to others?
Absolutely, no question about it. In every way, I could take you down the Constitution and the separation of powers and all of the things that are the foundation of what we do. The ability to amend. To amend the Constitution, and the Constitution being a very simple frame document, this shorter than every other state constitution, and the repetitiveness of the Constitution.
Yeah.
From the federal government to the state government to the local government. But when you don't have an agreement on the humanity of other people, then you subvert the Constitution.
Yeah, and in some sense, I mean, this is what liberal democracy is all about. I had a podcast about liberal democracy, the idea, you know, you don't have to agree with your fellow citizens about values necessarily. You can disagree about fundamental things, but there has to be something shared, right? There has to be something shared that you agree with, and you base everything on that. And a bunch of players up there improvising together have to be the same way, right?
And many times we are not. What has happened with our music, and many times one person will solo all night. Five people will solo forever. Monitors on the bandstand that are louder than the people who are playing, all with them in it. The strongest on the bandstand dominating. The bass turns the amp up to 15. And then it's very difficult to play the music. And then another thing that happens after that is slavery. And the slavery becomes, this system has too much freedom in it. Let me figure out how to repeat things over and over again so that we do away with some of this freedom. And that's the direction we will go in. If we listen to, if we check out the way systems are slowly beginning to dominate everything, and our systems, macro thinkers are very powerful. And you know, we don't realize that when you play a system, a very intelligently designed system, out to the furthest extreme of its efficiency, many of these systems don't include people.
Yeah.
It has to be something else.
Just the machine.
It's just a machine. It is just, we don't need you. Then after we don't need you, we don't want to see you.
And so you're saying we can think of jazz as a little bit of protest against this tendency when it's at its best. I mean, even in jazz, right?
Yeah.
In any form of art, you can always denigrate into something,
right?
Where it's a great man with an ego.
Yeah, a lot of it, though, a lot of the tenets of in the best of it, the recorded history of it, and jazz is also not anti the machine. It's not we're against the machine. We're against the abuse of tools, and we are for the basic principles of our way of government, and our music has a history that demonstrates that. Duke Ellington's orchestra demonstrated that. Benny Goodman's orchestra demonstrated that. Dave Brubeck's ensemble, John Coltrane, Art Blakey and the Jazz Messengers. We have Charles Mingus, and they were also able to express that and did express it. So it's not something we're speculating on.
And so jazz has a interesting position in history in the United States and right now, right? I mean, there's not a lot of radio stations out there that play primarily jazz. I mean, you've been as influential as anybody in not just keeping jazz alive, but keeping it vibrant and making sure that people are educated about it. I mean, how important is that to you?
It's very important for us to be educated about our country. We've stopped civics. You know, we have to understand it. That for a democracy to work, we have to be rabid about education.
Right.
Rabid, not about propaganda. Because I'm not a kind of left-right person. Right? I laugh at all of that. Because for me, it's like subterfuge. You know, it's like you and your friend start a fight in a store, and another one of your friends is going for the cash register. Now, all you got to do is get a black and a white friend, call each other a name. Everybody's looking at it.
Yeah.
That's all fake. Like, it's not... People are making money and they're exploiting. One of the biggest problems we have, and it happens in jazz, is the greatest players have to sacrifice for lesser players. Like the great Art Blakey allowed me to learn on his bandstand. I wasn't bringing anything to him. He had to be willing to sacrifice for me to learn. When you get the most educated class waging war on the uneducated class, man, you have a hard time. You're not going to get the same thing that you get with the Ku Klux Klan or somebody shouting and calling people names. Yeah. You're going to get contracts. You get the subprime loan scandal. You're going to get all the things that you see that are systems that play out on people who can't assess their position in space.
Mm-hmm. I mean, were you... I probably know the answer to this, but how much of this was in your brain when you were 12 years old and first learning to play the trumpet?
You know, a lot of it.
Yeah?
I didn't know it was about... playing the trumpet, but my mom and my daddy were very conscious because my father's a jazz musician.
And you, just so anyone knows, you're from New Orleans.
I'm from New Orleans.
You're a New Orleans guy.
And my mother was very conscious about reading, staying on top of stuff, being engaged. My father was very conscious. So I would always just be around listening to all of them talk.
Uh-huh.
And I didn't understand, of course, what I understand now, but I knew that you needed to know about the country. You needed to follow things. You needed to be, and that was in a time of consciousness. You know, I was a kid through the 60s, so people were conscious.
Yeah. It was something that was talked about, right?
Talked that the pop music was conscious, even if it was just Stevie Wonder's music, Marvin Gaye's music, what's going on for just the average kind of citizen that's out here that doesn't have an artist's father or mother. They were still engaged in making things better and being a part of a larger thing.
Right.
We lost that momentum, of course, over time because it's difficult to maintain that level of engagement with each other without being predatory.
Mm-hmm.
We celebrate predators.
Well, we it's natural to sort of devolve into conflict, right? Like, we try to talk to each other, we try to disagree. Again, this is something that I hope the podcast helps to spread, the idea we can disagree, still be friends, go out for the beer after, whatever. But it becomes harder and harder, especially in a very shouty age that we live in.
A shouty ideological age that is not respectful of any fact.
It's also true. That is right.
There has to be some fact that we agree on. We're in Louisiana. Okay, that's a fact. Let's just start with that.
Yeah.
And that's why I try to explain things in a human context. Like the musicians I knew, whether I argued with them or not, when we talked to each other, we were talking about human things.
Right.
Not my philosophy about their style of music. It was my mama is dying, or, you know, my son told me the other day, or can you believe that I had dyslexia and I was always ashamed, or, you know what I mean? It's human.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, when you try to be a communicator of science, even though science is based on facts and you should all agree them, if you really want to get things across, you have to be likable. Right. You have to relate it to people's interests, right? Mm-hmm. You know, people care about what matters for their lives. That's not surprising at all.
But that's what you're wonderful at. Like, when I first talked to you, you're very approachable. I started asking you about entanglement and will the universe just continue to expand?
Yeah.
And you started to give me very concrete kind of breakdowns of what something was in a way that I could understand it, and you're friendly.
I think it matters. You know, and honestly, to give credit where credit is due, my wife gets a lot of credit for this. I'm a scientist by training. She's a writer by training. So she's helped me in the communication skills. But so you went from this kid in a sort of household where all these ideas were talked about, and a very musical household, obviously, playing all sorts of things. Now you're the director of jazz at Lincoln Center, and that's a responsibility, right? That's not, I mean, how do you think of that role? I mean, you're a musician, you play the trumpet, you're a composer, but then you're also an ambassador, right?
Yeah, I'm honored to be in that role. You know, I mean, I love people, I like to talk about the music, and to be a part of people's lives, and to recognize other people. Jazz Lincoln Center is our basic tenets of what we do. We entertain, we educate, and we advocate for jazz through performance, through education, and through advocacy. We try to bring people together around the music. We have a very simple kind of down-home type of welcome vibration. We have no generation gap.
Oh, is that
no
true?
Segregation.
Okay, I was going to ask about that. Yeah,
we stress no generation gap, no segregation, and all of our music is modern.
Uh-huh.
We don't separate it into kind of time periods. We believe the music does have fundamentals. We don't believe everything that's a horn is jazz.
Yeah, okay.
But we're not against things that are not jazz. We just are in favor of jazz. And we've been blessed to work with, I mean, we've collaborated with so many musicians in different cultures and played with
Tell some of your favorites.
Man, I could just tell you a couple of stories. One is a great master drummer from Ghana, Yakub Adi. He passed away. I did a piece called Congo Square with him. It took me 10 years to write this piece. I used playing rhythms I couldn't figure out because his style of music, they play in two times at once. So I'm counting and doing all Western. And then a kid who I had taught when he was younger grew old enough. He started playing with an orchestra. His name is Carlos Enriquez, and he's from the Afro-Latin tradition. So he grew up playing on claves. So we're close enough, like he's really like my little brother. So he was always in my house. So I said, man, why is this sad? And we put it on, he started to interpret like kind of what the claves you're doing this is where one is, this is what we need to do.
He could translate for
me. He could translate for me. Yeah. So he translated for me. And Yakub, once funny stories, he was playing a rhythm. He said, ah, brother, this is a royal rhythm. I said, it don't sound royal to me. I'm American, man. We don't have royalty. And he said, that is why you will never play it correctly.
Well, he led you up to that, and you jumped right in.
You know what I'm saying? And Kurt Mazur was the conductor of the New York Philharmonic. He had grown up in Germany during the period of the Nazis. And he asked me to write a piece for the Philharmonic, and he said he wanted the piece to celebrate humanity and people coming together. And he told me, I'll never forget, he said, you have no idea of how thin the veneer is and how it can be pulled off. And people will cheerlead the very opposite. He said, and you be mindful of how fragile all of this is. And when you write this music, be cognizant of the fragility and be strong in an indictment of those things that are against human beings.
Well, music speaks directly to our emotions, right? And for better, that's for better or for worse. It can excite us for the good things, and you know it can be used as propaganda, right, for the less good things. I mean, what do you think about the state of jazz today, if that's not too grandiose a question?
Well, I think most of the younger musicians are demoralized, and mainly commercial music they're interested in. It's like the state of our country. We are consumed with a rampant commercialism and a materialism that is destroying our human connections. It's out front. It's embarrassing. It's a just kind of open corruption. And we have to get on track. And we're a long way away. It's not because of the president. He's, of course, a shining symbol of it. But it's not because of him.
It predates
long before that. Yeah. And I don't like when it's reduced to him, because it keeps us from addressing the issue.
There's deeper things going on.
Much deeper.
Than one guy,
Much deeper, much deeper. And we have taught it to our kids. We've used them as a market. They're now being sold to and exploited from a very young age. They can't defend themselves. We're not defending them. And music is a large part of the exploitation. Now, pornography is a fact of kids' lives. It leads them into their rituals of courtship and their development. Of course, I'm from an older generation, so I don't understand all of the nuances of it.
The Tinder and everything.
But I mean, no, it's not even so much a specific thing. It's just how many acts you can see.
Right. Every generation lives in a different world.
Yeah, everybody says that, but, you know, it's like you're working on a heart attack till you have it. And you tell somebody, man, you're going to have a heart attack. They say, I haven't had one. Okay? You haven't had one, but there's going to come a point where the kind of descent you're going to reach, there's a thought that because there's always misinformation and the conflation of fact, and there's always a kind of alarmist, the past is better. You touched on that too.
Yeah.
I love one thing you said. I took my notes. I could get it on my phone, but you said there are more. The gist of it is that there are fewer plausible pasts than there are possible futures.
Exactly.
That
right.
was what you said.
That's
so
right.
I love that.
That's right. Yeah.
You know, so the tendency is to always think the past was so glorious, and I'm not coming from there at all.
Yeah. You've got to be forward thinking.
Yeah, yeah. I'm just saying that our kids are not a market.
Right.
And our celebration of the market and of money has damaged our sense of the primacy of humanity. And that should be first. It should be first in our education, left or right. It's not from the right and it's not from the left. It's from all of it. And it's starting to rot. And we got to wake up.
But it's tough, you know. You got to earn a living. If you want to be a professional musician, being a jazz musician is hard, right?
You know, let it be hard.
Yeah, you told the story about your father. Could you tell the set?
I grew up watching my father just struggle and not make money. You know, he was always playing for 3 and 4 people, 5, 8 people in a room. And I just wondered over all these years, man, why do you keep doing this? And he said, somebody's got to do this. Why? You know, no, people need, if nobody's here, the people don't want this. Like, why? Why? It's music has meaning, but to who? Nobody is in here. It means something to me. And sometimes you have to be the one to say, the Constitution has meaning. Right. I am going to be civil, and I'm not going to just let the fact that somebody's paying me some money affect my ideology. The fact that somebody was given a tax break means that we should have policies that put people unjustly in jail. And it's not just a problem of those people. We are all those people. And that kind of super consciousness, we don't have that type of leadership. Not because of the president.
No, I get it, yeah.
And in no way am I supporter of the president's agenda, social agenda. In no way. You can't come from my background and support using people, Mexican people and, you know, Arabs and black people. You can't support that coming from where I come from. But once again, I don't want to pin a national problem on a figure that is actually doing the bidding of a large part of the nation.
Yeah, and one of the ways I think about this is how hard it is to be generous, right? To be generous to someone who we don't agree with. How easy it is to declare someone bad or evil because they're not on our side, and how hard it is to work together with people who are against us in some ways.
Oh, yeah, or to get in there, like you were saying, to get in there with someone who has a different point of view who can help you. Sometimes you have a figure that you cannot work with, which may be the case in this instance. But for our nation, the divisiveness that attacks all of us, regardless of who the president is, on an atomic level, we're responsible.
And you've written, you know, you've composed many things, and you obviously have quite a discography, and sometimes instrumentals, sometimes there's words in there, right. And your words are pretty unsparing. You don't yeah. mess around, right?
No, I don't. I'm very direct, and I try to be as honest as I can be. You know, I can as honest as I can be at the time with the information I have. And everything is not right, but it's as right as I can feel when I write a piece. I think it's serious, and I don't care who doesn't like it. And I don't mind them expressing that they don't like it. That's one of the strengths of our way of life.
We should all strive for that attitude. I would love to be able to do that. It's what I try to do. Yeah,
we can't stop them.
Yeah, yeah. And do you see the younger people today? Is there a jazz following out there?
I don't see that much of a following with the younger people because the younger people are marketing. We're trying to sell things to them, and they are largely their sexuality has been co-opted by visual images. And jazz is about music and its quality.
Right.
You have to take the time, and we are not interested in teaching our younger people how to take time and to be a part of our way of life.
I do think there's room for optimism in the sense that technology, et cetera, has given people more room to be creators, to be, you know, innovators themselves. Is that too optimistic? Dixie?
No, I think there's always a... younger people, I teach a lot of students, and I always tell them what they're going to do, I cannot see that. I give them some information that they can use and what they're going to do, but they have to do what they're going to do. And the biggest thing I see in my students is the ones who are really creative suffer the greatest failure of optimism and of belief. It's easy for them to become
really?
Cynical and just say, man, I'm just going to make some money, or I'm just going to dumb my music down, or I need to get a public. Like, I can't just be out here. It's hard to keep their belief strengthened so that they can be innovative as musicians.
Right.
Because the music they're hearing, a lot of it is like wallpaper, like it's being made by a person on a computer. And it's not like a democratic. The music is not, the people are not even in this room at the same time. They're making an artifact.
Right.
Which is can be very creative. Human beings are creative in anything we do. It doesn't matter. For jazz musicians, it's not optimal for us because our music is very much human.
You're sneaking looks over at the bass player and the drummer, right?
Yeah,
you know, what changes are you going to do next?
It's about human beings and how we interact, not about our tools that we have developed.
I mean, you play obviously a lot at Lincoln Center. You played large concerts, but there is something romantic about being in with one or two other people up there in a tiny stage, right?
Yeah, I love it, but I love it in any context.
Okay.
Just, you know, it is, of course, when you're in a small place. I guess also for me, it's how I grew up. So a small place with no people in it, I'm at home. Man, I get down there at 2:30 in the morning.
Yeah, exactly.
That's what I knew.
That's jazz time as far as I'm concerned.
That's what I knew.
But it's not all you do. You've also been very successful in the classical music world. And how do you mentally sort of make that leap, or do you even see a difference between jazz and classical music?
Yeah, there's a difference in procedure and training and the style of music, but classical music is one of the foundations of jazz. So I also love that music. I don't play as much, but I do write pieces for orchestras. And I use the experience I had playing for many years. I love playing in orchestra, playing all the great orchestral pieces. And I do feel that's a library that is so phenomenal that we sell that library short. I always wonder, well, never forget about the power of this library.
So what are some of your favorite classical pieces?
Man, I could start with any symphony of Haydn, all the Beethoven symphonies, Beethoven string quartets, all the Bach's music is great. Doesn't even matter what you listen to. Palestrina, Pope Marcellus Mass. I like the name, but it's an unbelievable piece. Bartok, Concerto for Orchestra, Stravinsky, whatever you take your pick. Ligeti, you can just go on and on and on. It's fantastic. Brahms, fantastic library. Mahler, Strauss. Yeah. I'm very thankful that I was able to develop the ability to hear that library in high school, because when I started, I couldn't hear that kind of music at all.
Ah.
And I thought it was only for white people. But to be able to overcome that ignorance and that prejudice and actually listen to the music, it's akin to a person who doesn't know what jazz is. Like, if you can get to where you can hear John Coltrane's music, Thelonious Monk, right, Duke Ellington, Count Basie, and you know it's a struggle, you have to work on it. But if you get to where you can hear it, it's so many unbelievable riches. And classical music is, man, Shostakovich. Shostakovich, Seventh Symphony. If you can get to where you can hear that, I strongly encourage you to develop a taste for it, because these were very, very serious people who sacrificed a great deal for music and had extreme insight into the nature of many things.
And there's also sort of especially if you're a kid, there's just a coolness barrier, right? Like when I first started listening to jazz, sure, Miles Davis, John Coltrane, Charlie Parker, and it was years later that I started listening to Duke Ellington, and I was like, where have I been? What was I doing, man?
Yeah, okay, you know what's happening. Yeah, I was like that too. I didn't like Duke. Big band music, man, like Jerry Tall,
exactly,
old people.
Right. That's like your grandparents listen to that.
That's exactly, we have the same experience with it. And with that kind of quality music, I feel of any tradition, it could be tango music I was listening to, it was my man. Like, I always forget people's names, but I was checking out my tango orchestras from the 1950s and 60s, and I was like, man, listen to this. And the Brazilian music of Moisés Santos. There are these figures in every culture that were deeply engaged with the music of their culture.
Yeah.
And they created things that when we touched them, Horacio Salgan is the person who I was looking for in tango music. And when you include them into your listening, they lift you.
Yeah. And do you incorporate classical elements into your jazz composing and vice versa?
Sure.
Yeah.
Yes. It's only natural you would use contrapuntal elements that come from classical music, harmonic devices, orchestrational techniques. Why not? It's what you're talking about, the physical universe.
No, I know. It's all the waves. But would there be the kind of improvisation that you do in jazz that would sneak its way? Pianists, right?
Yeah, when you write for classical musicians, an orchestra, I had an idea for one the other day of how could you get everybody to improvise, not in a vocabulary that's jazz, like in a rhythmic vocabulary, and in a non-harmonic vocabulary. I figured out how I want to write a symphony that's all with a lot of improvisation in it.
Hmm.
You have to figure out the improvisation not in the jazz context.
Right, exactly.
You can use the same forms, but you have to give the different sections because you have 70 people. You know, it's
like you said, improvising multiple people at once. Actually, you said something earlier today that was fascinating about just, you know, two trumpet players up on stage. And the phrase you used over and over again was sharing space.
Right.
And that's the trick, right?
Yeah, to share space is complicated. You and your wife.
Yeah.
You and your brothers or your sister. You and yourself. You know, how can you make space for yourself? Now it's two of us, so there's less and there's more at the same time. There's less for us to eat, but there's more.
Right, yeah. There's more variety, there's more inspiration, there's more tension,
that's
creative tension.
That's growth.
Right? Yeah. But that's why it's so much improvisation is done in the soloing context, right? I mean, how often do we get 5, 6, 7 people literally improvising?
Well, very difficult, but if you get 5 or 6 different functions, you can get it.
Yep, okay.
But if 5 or 6 of them are playing in the same functional space,
the same role,
it's very hard for that to sound good, unless that's the point of it.
Right.
Then it can sound great. You know, just be, this is a texture of 5 or 6 people soloing.
And you've also played with country artists, with rock and roll artists. I only found out last night when I was anticipating this interview that you did a whole album with Eric Clapton.
Right. And we were playing blues.
Yeah. Well, there's a common language.
It's
a
common language. It's our language is so much more common than the language we spoke with Yacoub. I mean, and somebody like Eric, who loves blues and has studied it and played it, he said we were going to do King Oliver's Band orchestration with blues songs. So whether some of the basis of rock and roll is blues.
Yeah.
Rock and roll started as shuffles that Count Basie's orchestra would play, which became played by Louis Jordan's band. And then it went on to be that. Later it became segregated in America and it stood for white. But that had nothing to do with the music.
I remember, you know, so I was growing up 70s and 80s, just a little bit after you, and, you know, Living Color?
Of course.
And I was a huge fan, and I was, like, shocked to learn that here was a rock and roll, hard rock band. They were all African-American, and people objected to that. They're like, what are these African-Americans doing playing rock and roll? And I was like, what? Where did you come from? Isn't that where it all originated?
Yeah, you know, I mean, I don't even, you know, there's so many different kind of people. I used to have a friend, you would say, people say this. And he said, there's a lot of people.
There's a lot of people. People say things. Yeah, and, they do.
Yeah, I remember Vernon Reed, I think.
Yeah, Vernon Reed was the guitarist for Living Color. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I remember.
Yeah.
In New York in the 80s.
That's right. Exactly. Yeah. And now you waded into hot water recently, right? Talking about hip hop.
It's not hot water to me.
No, it's good to like the hot water. But so what are your feelings about hip hop for those
who I don't I was know? Not speaking of hip hop as a feel, I was talking about specifically the use of certain words that I don't like.
Right.
To be mainstream words.
Yeah.
I first started saying that in 1987. Now it's 2018. So the public has made its decision. They like that. They want that. Let's not forget the minstrel show lasted for 100 years.
Yeah.
If you count 1840 to the end of Amos and Andy. There is a taste in our country for that. I don't share that taste.
Right.
So if it gets me in hot water because I say I don't share it, and they want to truncate what I'm saying to be a blanket indictment of hip-hop and make it seem irrational, there's nothing you can do about that.
Sure.
I'm grown.
You got to say what you think.
I'm a grown man.
Right.
And I believe that those words are destructive. And they have been destructive because they've been out here for 30 years. They didn't just get out here. The nation has chosen. They like that. Okay. I have to live with that, but I don't have to like it.
So you think it's a coarsening?
I think what you think.
Yeah.
We all think something. All we got to do is look at it. We don't want to be attacked, but we all think something.
So there is socially conscious hip-hop. There's poetry in hip-hop, but it's
I'm not
sort
talking
of not
about
winning,
that kind.
Right?
Yeah, I'm not talking about that kind.
Yeah, exactly.
And I'm not talking about it itself in a blanket, in any type of blanket kind of crazy, unintelligent way.
Yeah.
Whatever it is that's unintelligent, that does not account for the fact that there are many different kinds of a thing, I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about what is in the mainstream from a linguistic standpoint. And I'm not even commenting on it musically, which I'm qualified to, but I'm not. That's not what I speak about.
You're not going to comment now?
I'm not going to comment about it. No, because it doesn't matter. It's the direction that all of our music has gone in, of a kind of way of being produced and a way of being treated as a product, and to segregate hip hop from everything else is unfair.
That's a very good point. I mean, it doesn't hip hop doesn't create the universe around it, right?
No.
It's the other way around.
No, so but what I speak about is very specifically about certain languages that I did not like when it was first around.
Sure.
Then I was young, so sometimes I see a young person. Well, you're just an old guy I was saying this before you were born.
Right. Yeah.
And once again, the nation has clearly spoken. It likes that.
Yeah.
But I knew it liked it when my mama told me something when she realized when it stumbled into all of that talking about the words I say I don't like, call people bitches and all that. My mother said, it's going to get unlimited resources now.
Yeah, I mean, I feel I like hip hop when it's good. And of course, whether it's good is up to me, right?
As it is for everybody.
But there, you know, some of the classic albums from some of the early ones, like I can't listen to. It's harsh, right? And it's kind of a shame.
It's up to each person. And once again, what we think about it has no impact on who likes it.
Right.
We're not judges. Like we don't have the opportunity or the ability to pass a sentence on it and keep people from making their records. Or this is a democracy.
Well, we can make them think.
Maybe.
Yeah. Good,
but I've been talking about it for years. I don't think anybody thought about it. People are making money with it. And it's a national pastime. It's not just something to do with black people.
Oh, yeah. No, you know, not at all. Not
there's
anymore.
Like a tremendous national taste for this type of imagery.
Yeah. And not just in hip-hop, obviously. And,
right. Not just in hip-hop. I'm not a fan of that.
Right.
Not saying I don't think it should exist. I don't think it should be a mainstream.
Right.
So I'm even qualifying it more. If you want to go somewhere and get stuff, hey, we always had stuff that was like that.
Kendrick Lamar just won the Pulitzer Prize in music. You were the first, is that right? You were the first winner of the Pulitzer Prize in music that
jazz.
Was not classical at all.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, that was a great thing. And, you know, it's I don't know a lot about that world. To me, it's probably similar to the Nobel Prize in the sense that there's a lot of bad things about people chasing prizes and things like that. The prize doesn't always go to the best person, but maybe it can help bring some attention to some good work.
Yeah, I don't know. The prizes are not, I don't prizes are as serious as the rigor at which people who hand out the prizes have about them.
Right.
I think it's good for people to win prizes and to celebrate other people and to show up at shows with tuxedos on because it's fun.
I totally agree.
And it doesn't mean anything larger than that.
Right.
I don't really look at it. I remember when I won 2 Grammys, my father and mother came out to Los Angeles, and there were many other people who should have won, could play better than me. So after the Grammys, I was in the room with my father, and my father looked at me and said, wow, the Grammys. He didn't, you know, he's not a guy who's Hollywood kind of pop central. Yeah. He doesn't care about any of that.
Yeah.
So he looked at me before I went out in the street to party. He said, yeah, you won 2 Grammys, man. I'm glad you won. You know, it's been winning, it's been losing. Then he seriously looked at me and said, I hope you don't think that this means you can play. Okay, I was 21. I understood exactly what he meant.
But I think that the whole point of winning a Grammy is to impress your parents.
But he was. I mean, I knew my father would not be impressed. But and he also was not dousing me. He wasn't trying to. He was just saying, man, you know, this stuff is not really about.
Not,
it's,
you know what,
it's fun,
not.
But it's not about nothing.
No.
Like, you need to learn how to play, son. You play okay, but you're not the best anything. And, in his way, you'd have to know him. In no way was it like a negative or a dousing. I laughed. Actually, I said, man, I know better than this. You know, we go out and party and have a good time. So somebody's got to win these awards.
Yeah.
So I think I congratulate people when they win awards, and we keep it moving. There's going to be another award next year, and it's not. I don't look at them one way or not look at them. I'm not critical or non-critical.
What are your goals for your own music in the future?
To become better musician, write better music, become better at dealing with the orchestra, combine more forms and do more things that are interesting and innovative with jazz music and putting it to become a better soloist, be more sophisticated in my understanding of different forms around the world, and just be more dedicated and humbler about my development.
These are good goals for everybody. But I'll say also, you know, we're here at this conference with, you know, there's people talking about politics and science and everything, and you were one of the people up there on stage, but you were also one of the people in the audience, right? You were listening, you know, so it's your mind is growing as well as your technique.
I loved it. Man, I loved your presentation, and I loved a lot of the presentation. I took a lot of notes. I go back and study, read books people said. It's a luxury to be able to sit up and hear unbelievably brilliant people talk. You know, everybody's dedicated. Think of all the dedication you've had and your journey. And another thing you learned as a jazz musician is, you know, that the creativity is all over the world. My father used to always say, man, it's a many creative, great people who don't wear signs saying, I'm creative, I'm great, I'm smart. And learn how to put your radar up.
You can find it.
And listen.
Yeah.
And believe me, I'm on it. I'm on this podcast we on. I'm putting it on in the morning. I'm checking you out. No, I'm not just saying it because I'm on it. I mean that. I'm gonna love being educated about the things that you're talking about with the guests you have on, and I've thoroughly enjoyed myself. Everything from new developing cities to autism, to the Me Too movement, to what you were talking about, what Julie was talking about. I mean, you know, it's all interest, 3D copying.
Did you have any, or have you had any special interest in science in general, or is this just?
I always loved science when I was growing up.
Yeah,
you know, I loved all of the sciences. I loved biology. I always did pretty good as a student, and chemistry, and I loved the sciences. You know, I told you I read the Dancing Wu Lee Masters years ago.
Uh huh.
And I am interested. I need to be educated.
There's an infinite number of things that we all need to learn, right?
Right.
That we don't. That's we're not going to run out of interesting things to learn about.
Right.
But we were having this interesting conversation the other night about entanglement, quantum mechanics,
right?
And maybe there's a connection with jazz. And, well, in fact, I mean, it's almost a cliche. I don't know if you know Stefan Alexander. Do you know that name? He is a physics professor at Dartmouth who wrote a book called The Jazz of Physics.
The Jazz of Physics. I haven't read that book yet, but yeah, I know him.
He is a saxophone player.
Yeah, I know him.
Yeah. And I mean, part of me, like, you know, we're trained, just like you're trained to be a critic of music, we're trained in science to be skeptical, right? When someone makes some grandiose claim. So the claim would be that, you know, there is at least an analogy between how we already talk about waves and waves bumping into each other. Clearly, that's part of music, rhythm and so forth, tone and pitch. But there's also randomness, right? There's probability, but it's not a mess, right? There's probability in quantum mechanics. Things don't exist until you observe them. You bring them into existence. And maybe there is an analogy that's useful there between that unconscious solo that you're doing, that until you played the note, it wasn't there. Like, you didn't write it out ahead of time.
Well, I think that repetition is a way that we control entropy. Mm-hmm. Like, we have to repeat things. I was talking with an artist, and he was making me laugh. He said, "I see the world new every day, and I create new things every day." I said, "Well, I equate that with being on the run, because
you stop and smell the roses a little bit.
we all have things we're gonna do that we're touchstones. Like, we're gonna that's part of being in a kind of system that. But if you're running, you're not doing a lot of things that are the same."
It's true. And I think that we even mentioned before the balance between something different and something that fits in.
That's right.
Is sort of what you're looking for. And that goes into what I said about entropy, in the sense that we start with a universe that's simple. We end with a universe that's simple. Entropy is going up along the way, but it's in the middle, where entropy is middle and complex structures are there and you don't know what's going to happen. It's not so simple. That's what's fun.
Right. And you're saying you're trying to order them in a way that you can order them to understand whatever you can understand.
Yeah, we try to understand bit by bit.
But jazz gives you the opportunity to understand slices of reality, not just from your perspective. Now, you understand it so much, I call it at the speed of instinct. Mm-hmm. Like, how fast is instinct? Man, it's fast. Shit. You know what I'm saying? That's fast. That's speed.
Yeah.
And you're playing in that on the edge always of instinct, because it's always a present moment, present moment, present moment, present moment. And you're trying to command that present, like riding a wave.
Right.
And you're just going on that wave. And there's other people. The presence of other people make you all have, it's like a hydra. And you're perceiving them, and you're perceiving the form, and you're perceiving the audience, and they're perceiving you. And it's all going on, boom, then it's over. Then you can listen to it and assess it. When you're playing it, you can't.
Right. I mean, do you ever just trance out? You're just like playing, you don't even notice what's going on?
I'm always like that. I'm only listening. Like, I'm listening so intensely and trying to just, it's like you're just looking at something in the space. Yeah. Like Dizzy Gillespie told me, he asked Louis Armstrong, called me once at 4 o'clock in the morning in Los Angeles. He said, "Are you up?" I said, "Of course, man. Of course I'm up.
It's only 4 o'clock."
He said, "Man, I remember I went to the ophthalmologist, and he said, when you want to play low, look low. When you want to play middle register, play. And when you want to play high, look up high." And Dizzy told me, he said, "Man, I started doing it." I said, "Wow." I asked Louis Armstrong one time. I said, "Pops, why are you always looking up high? What are you looking for?" And he said, Pops told him, "I don't know, Brother Diz, but I always find it."
He was looking for some high notes up there, right?
He's looking into the air. He's looking up there where his stuff is. Sometimes I tease a musician, we're on the bandstand, and I see them looking at it, and I know what they're looking at. And I'll say, "Look at it. You know, look at it."
Focus on that.
Because when you look at a point in space, you're not looking at anything, but you're trying to just hear and perceive everything that's going on and order it and figure out, where do I fit into this? And it's such an unbelievably exciting thing when it's done well.
And it's, you know, I wrote a book about time and the nature of time and how clocks tell time and everything. And our bodies are full of clocks, right? Our bodies are full of things that do the same thing in a rhythm over and over again, whether it's our heartbeat or our breathing or our nerves bouncing back and forth. And I think that really good music, whether it's jazz or classical or whatever, it feeds into that and draws from it, right? It's like the rhythms inside us come out in some interesting way.
I would love to see. I would love to get in the. I'm gonna get the book, but Do you talk about all the different clocks that are in the body? I mean, if I looked at it, would it give me an understanding of what they are?
No, but I have friends who know that stuff, right? Yeah, I'm just a physicist, but you know, the body is far too complicated for me. But it goes into, you know, some things can be taught and some things are just kind of in you. Right. I don't want to say they're, you know, inherited, but they come from places we don't understand.
It's instinctual.
Right? Yeah, it's instinctual.
It's a thing. Right? Like in jazz, we call it a thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, you got that thing.
I sometimes for the podcast interview neuroscientists. Did anyone ever try to like put you in a brain scanner while you're playing,
no,
while you're improvising?
I know. Somebody was talking about doing it with a band.
Yeah.
But we didn't do it. I would love to do it.
Well, David Popple, who's a, I'll hook you up if you want to do it.
I would love to do
so,
it.
So, because his thing is, there's different ways of looking inside the head to see what your brain is doing. Now, I mean, this is stuff that we've developed over the last couple decades, right? So, you don't need to do surgery to peek into the brain. That you can do an MRI, which will show you where in the brain things are happening, but it's very slow. So if you're, even if you're just talking, forget about improvising, forget about playing fast, you don't know when it's happening. But what you can also do, what's happening in the brain, right, are these chemicals zooming around, and they make little magnetic fields that pop outside your head, and they can measure those right away.
Man, I would love to see that, what it would be like for a band really playing and improvise. I would love my students to do it. And I told you I want you to talk to my students. They would love it. I got great students at Juilliard.
I would love to do that. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And, you know, I think it's coming because brain-computer interfaces. I think this is a common theme for me, but I think that, you know, one of the things that's going to change the future is our ability to forget about our fingers, just go right from the brain to the machine or
telepathic
whatever, and go back and forth. And it might be very, very slow, and it might, you know, be 100 years from now, so that's okay. I'm a physicist. If it's 100 years, nothing, right? I think that, yeah, well, it'll be interesting to see how we learn about music. We learn about what it means. Some people less musical, like I can't sing a note, but I love listening to other people and sing. It's great. So, Wynton Marsalis, thank you so much for this fantastic conversation.
Man, it's such a pleasure. I have so much respect, and it's an honor and pleasure.
And keep the journey going. Yeah.
Yes, sir. That's what we both doing.
All right. Thanks, man.
Yes, sir. Thank you.